All right. Welcome, listener. Happy to be here today. I've got an incredible guest joining us that has a real cool perspective on mental health from various roles he's had. He's a real good friend of mine. So without further ado, let's welcome Dan Hogg, the state budget director and good friend of mine to the pod. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks, Brent. I think calling me an incredible guest is a little overstatement, but we'll see what we can do here to, you know, try to make this a little interesting for people.
Dan and I joked that when he agreed to do this, that we'd just bore the heck out of everybody. How can we make budget interesting? And we're going to do our very best.
Yeah, it's a tough task.
We're going to do it, though. So I need to start because Dan and I have a long history together. We've been friends for a long time, and it kind of started, I think, way back. We first got to know each other back probably in around 98 or so when I started in the Senate. I came out of grad school at Mizzou. Dan came out of, if I remember, out of Illinois. But you were at that time when I started in the Senate on appropriations, you were at OA.
Yeah.
Were you forecasting then?
Yeah. I was
the economist.
Yep. I was the economist for the budget office, forecasting the tax revenues coming in, also doing, you know, fiscal notes, doing estimates of what tax bills would cost, either bring in if it was a tax increase or what, you know, lower revenues by. So yeah, I was doing that started in 95.
In 95. So you've been there a few years.
Yeah, a couple years.
Who was governor when you got hired?
Governor Carnahan.
So it was
Governor Carnahan. Yeah. So yeah, I go all the way back to Governor Carnahan. Yeah, so it's been a while.
It's been a few governors ago.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And that's when we got to know each other and just kind of cool. And then you came down to even Senate Appropriations at some point.
Yeah.
We worked together for several years.
Yeah. I think I came in 2002.
Yeah, 2002, that's right.
Marty Druhl, who was the director then, brought me in, and I, you know, that was maybe the most fun place I've ever worked. I mean, we had such a great group down there.
We really did. We'll scratch the surface, but can't dig too deep into that.
Yeah, those stories need to sort of stay off the public airwaves.
It's a separate podcast, yeah, that's right. Well, let's talk a little bit, though, just before we dig into the work stuff, because there's a lot of things there, but one of the things that's kind of really unique, I think, about Jefferson City, and I wonder if it's true about all the state capitals, but I think because Jeff City's so small for a state capital city that a lot of the folks that were in state government know each other.
Yeah.
Because you're in this small town, and if your kids are active and doing stuff, you develop these relationships over time that are just kind of weird in a way. So Dan and I each coached each other's kids in different sports. And so Dan coached my daughter Gabby in basketball, and I coached Lexi in soccer. And then not just that you and I got to know each other, but like other figures like governor-elects and other people and chief of staff and this and that are people we know from sports over
there. Yeah, yeah.
Which is really kind of wild.
Yeah, from the girls, you know, they played a lot of different sports. And the one thing I always remember about you coaching my daughter Lexi in soccer and me coaching Gabby in basketball is Lexi listened to you great. Whatever you wanted her to do, she did. When I asked her to do something, she was like, "I don't want to do that, Dad." And Gabby, your daughter, was the exact opposite. Whatever I asked her to do, she'd run through a brick wall with me.
But
when you were coaching her, she'd be like, "Why are we doing this, Dad?"
Just let the sprite back, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
It's fun. We had a lot of great times. And you always, when you have kids like that, your old friend groups get tougher, and you kind of gravitate toward other friend groups that are involved in those sports and activities. And, you know, we were really blessed, Dan, I think, with such a great group of friends that came out of that you still 100%. Stay in touch with.
Yep.
And then now we work together and try to be very careful, you know, so to speak. I tend to try never to bug you about work stuff or misuse that relationship, but it's super nice to just know people and be able to talk to someone, which is really important in the work we do. So anyway, that's enough about sports. We have a lot of pretty funny stories too that we could tell in the sports world, but that might not be what we do here. But so then our old boss, you mentioned Marty Druhl and what a great environment. He was a great boss to learn from. And Marty is now, just for everybody's information, is a sergeant at arms in the Senate. So he's the guy in the sports coat. He doesn't have any weapons or anything, but he's kind of the dude that like tries to make sure there is someone there to kind of you know, keep an eye on stuff.
Yeah.
Make sure we're all behaving and
let the guests into the chamber and make sure all that. Make sure the
protocol
senators are taken care of. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's our old boss, Mark. Yep. And he does that part time and does a really great job of that. But yeah, you then take over Senator Appropriations when Marty retired, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, walked into such a great situation down there, had a, you know, great staff that was down there. Like I said, I think that was maybe the most enjoyable, you know, at least personally, job I had, because we were pretty small staff and pretty close knit. You were still on the staff then, and, you know, a lot of others that I consider some of my really good friends, you know, were there. And so that was a really good time. I think I was in the Senate 10 years.
Yeah.
And then I followed you over to Department of Mental Health.
That's right.
You know, you left the Senate and went to mental health. And then when you left mental health to go, you know, into the private sector, I sort of followed over there and became director of administration over there after you left.
Yeah. Well, now we'll get into the mental health stuff and kind of what you learned, because we each came to it after kind of knowing about mental health and budget, but not necessarily having a clinical background or a lot of experience with mental health. So we'll get into that, but kind of talk about after, like, just where you're at now, like your perspective. You're at mental health. Keith Schaefer drug you over there. He has a way of persuading.
Another great mentor. You know, worked for Marty Druel, who was great, and then go to work for Keith Schaefer, who was really, you know, at least in Missouri, in the mental health world, is just a giant, and learned a lot of things from him.
Absolutely.
On, you know, how to manage people and how to deal with the legislature and just, you know, I mean, Keith was, somebody was really
a master, and you show, you do the same thing. Like how you, they often try to get you or they try to at least, you know, make a point or something. And he had a real good way of understanding they're going to do that no matter what. And how you respond to it's, you know, important to understand they're not out to get you personally sometimes. Yeah. It's to make a point.
Yeah.
They're going to do it no matter what you say.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. So, you know, you sort of, when you're testifying, you know, one of the things I've learned is, you know, you don't take it personal when they sometimes are a little bombastic when they're questioning you. But the other thing is, you know, you got to stick to your guns because you know what you know, and don't let them sort of change what you're trying to do, because I think they do try to get some people sort of off their games and get rattled, but you know, luckily in working in the Senate, I got experience testifying in front of committees, and then at mental health I did it. So now as state budget director, you know, it's like anything else in life, the more you do it, the better you get at it, the more relaxed you become. And so, you know, it's just sort of having those reps in to get used to it.
Well, and then like when legislative, we have the term limits in Missouri, so you get a new legislators coming in all the time, but I'm sure they talk to each other and the senior ones pass along, and they know, they can say, Dan's been here a while, he knows what he's talking about, so he should maybe pay attention.
Yeah, it's one of the benefits of being old and just having been around. You know, I mean, that's just one of the things is, you know, it's not necessarily a skill, it's just I've been here.
I can tell you, we did this 10 years ago. We tried this 5 years ago, and that history is important.
But
so, budget director, you're the state budget director.
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
Well,
I don't even know if I know this story. So how did that roll out?
Like, so I'd been at,
who was governor?
Yeah, I was. I've been at mental health for about 3 years, and the governor was Governor Nixon, who's a great supporter of
mental health.
And so I'm over there. And the budget director at the time, Linda Lubring, was going to retire. And so I get called into Keith Schaefer's office, the departmental health director, and he says, Governor Nixon, I think you should be budget director. I wasn't ever really asked to be budget director. I never was like, we want to interview you for budget director. It was like, you're going to be budget director.
I'll be done.
And so I was like,
Keith and Governor
Nixon. I was like, I am.
You are. Budget
director. So they said, you know, we think, you know, you'd be a good fit. And, you know, I'd worked with Governor Nixon on various things, both when I was in the Senate and then at mental health. And so I think he had a comfort with me, and Keith was willing to let me go. And originally the plan was, because there was only about 2 years left in Governor Nixon's term, he was going to be termed out. And so the original plan was I was going to go over there for then and then come back to mental health. They kept my job open and I was going to come back. That was the plan. I really liked working at mental health, you know, thought it was a great place to work. And the mission is just, I think, really important. So I had planned to come back to mental health, you know, because I had quite a while left in my career, and sometimes budget director, sort of a dead end job, because every new governor picked sort of a new person to be their budget director. So I, you know, said, I want to come back here. And they said, that's good. Well, you know, put an interim in your division of admin and you can come back and do it for 2 years. And so
one thing about you though, Dan, is like Governor Nixon was a Democrat.
Yeah.
Keith Schaefer had worked for Republican and Democratic governors as a mental health director. And then you obviously in the Senate and worked for Republican appropriation chairs because the party controlled the Senate then too. So you had a bipartisan background for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I was just sort of a bureaucrat coming up through, you know, I didn't really ever have any political background. I never did campaigns or worked in any politician's office. I was just a budget guy that sort of kept getting moved up almost against my will half the time, I worked for Governor Nixon as budget director for 2 years, roughly. I think I became budget director in August of 2015. So, you know,
and Linda
Lubrin was a great budget director, and her and I had worked together when I was first in the budget office. When I first came into state government, she was there. So I knew Linda, and I think
she was great.
Linda was probably instrumental in advising Governor Nixon that I was somebody that would come in and hopefully do a good job for him.
Well, then what happens when Governor Nixon leaves, termed out, new governor's elected.
Yeah. So Governor Greitens gets elected. You know, totally an outsider. He had no state connections or anything. Right. So I had no connections to him at all, didn't know him at all. And so he came in and I just sort of was helping him with the transition and said, I'll help you however you want me to help. And then I'm going to go back to mental health. And so he said, all right. And then towards the end of transition, he said, can you stay with me through session and be budget director and get through the legislative session, get the budget through the House and Senate? And so did that. And then after session, he said, I want you to stay here full time and be the budget director full time. And so I said, all right, I'll do that. And so that's how I ended up being. But he was a Republican, but Nixon was a Democrat, but, you know, like I said, I never really had a political affiliation. I'm just trying to work for Missouri and help Missouri be the best state it can be. And so then
obviously the history of Missouri, people know this, Greitens leaves office a little early and Carson comes in.
He left in the middle of his term. You know, he was left about a little less than 2 years into his term under circumstances we don't need to talk about, but Governor Parson came in. I knew Governor Parson a little bit. He had been lieutenant governor immediately before governor, obviously. But when he was a state senator, he was on the appropriations committee, and I was director of the staff. So we knew, again, it was sort of like he never really formally asked me to stay. I just kept working, and, you know, I'd go up to his office, and I don't know if he ever totally, you know, was like,
never really said anything.
But we just worked together for 6 years, you know, and so, you know.
Still an interim.
Yeah.
You don't even know. Yeah.
But, you know, but he's really good to work with, and it was nice to sort of have that sort of pre-existing relationship with him because we could hit the ground running, and we did. And so,
well, I'm going to geek out as a budget guy because that, you know, we talked about that's our background. Yeah. It's kind of in state government, either forecasting or fiscal notes or preparing budgets, and that's what we did, and that's kind of what we, you know.
Yeah,
I truly believe, you know, the budget drives policy. The budget drives everything in this state.
You put your money where your mouth is. You know, that saying is,
and that's really critical.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, I remember getting called to Nixon's office one Friday, and just kind of the intimidation factor of that. I was not there often, but, you know, Keith was always part of the cabinet. And so then you get budget directors. That's a next level access to the governor.
So you're
making the executive budget.
We are
reviewing vetoes. You're reviewing withholds. All the stuff that goes into that. Like, So you, once you start with Nixon, I mean, what's that like? You've now worked for three governors. Those meetings with governors, they're making decisions,
they
asking for your recommendation, your staff recommendation, and how does that all work? I mean, you're there.
Yeah, we literally, with the governor, will go through thousands of different budget items. You know, it's not like they only look at the big items. We're going through, you know, even increases of $10,000-$20,000, we run it past them. Now, that's generally a shorter conversation than when we're asking them for something that's $100 million, you know, or the tougher conversations are when times are not good and you have to go up there and say, you know, governor, we're going to have to, you know, we're not going to have enough money to finish this year with the budget that was passed. We're going to have to withhold. We're going to have to mid-year start telling people you don't have as much money to spend. You're going to have to cut back, or we're going to have to stop this program. And so, you know, you've got to, you know, have that relationship with the governor where you can give them the bad news and that they trust you. You know, I've told all the governors I've worked for, I said, you know, I'm going to tell you my opinion. I'm going to give you the best advice possible. But nobody elected me to make the final decision. They elected you, and I'm going to help you make the best decision. I'm going to make sure you got the best information. I'm going to give you my best advice on it. But regardless of whether you take my advice or not, it's your decision, and I'm going to support that decision once you make that decision. I'm going to make sure that whatever decision that is, it's the most successful it can be, whether it's adding money to a program or in tough times taking money away from a program. So that's what I sort of see the role of the state budget director and the whole budget office is, because I've got a staff of, you know, 25 people that make me look good. You know, they're the ones that really get down into the nitty gritty now and are really getting the information and finding the facts and that, and they bring it to me, and then I take it to the governor's staff and ultimately the governor. But I've been lucky. All the governors I've worked for have appreciated that. You know, they haven't got upset with me if I sometimes say, well, I know that's what you're saying, but you know, you need to think about it in this way, because there may be some issues there if you do that.
And really, they need that advice.
Yes, they do.
Because it is easy when you're a political creature. I say that in a good way, not a bad way. They have ran for office. They have ideas and platforms, and that's what the voters put them there for. But how you translate that into policy with all the regulatory climate, things that you got to consider, history, they got to have someone there that can give them that advice. It's just really important.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, it's as simple as like, governor, we tried that 6 years ago and that didn't work too good. I know maybe it sounds good on the surface, but once you actually try to put it into practice, it doesn't work so well. So, you know, but yeah, they've all been very receptive to that. They've let me, you know, feel free to tell them what I think.
That's great to know, actually.
I think they've all, you know, been very receptive to that. And they don't always take my advice, because sometimes they have bigger picture things that they need to think about that this is a piece of. And so it's like, all right, I understand that. And we understand, and we'll make it work and figure out how to do it.
It's kind of the Senate too, Dan, in a way. Like, I remember being told very early on that you have to have the trust of every senator, and that's a real sacred deal. And so, like, if a senator wants to talk about adding something, you don't go tell the committee chair, you don't go, that's just their right as a senator to have that conversation and talk about that. So we always kind of had a balance about how we could do things in the Senate, and it was really important that we were trusted by everybody on that committee and in the floor.
Well, and I think, you know, you bring up the Senate where we work together. I think that's a great training ground, because we were nonpartisan staff. We didn't work for the Republicans. We didn't work for the Democrats. We worked for senators. And so we got to work with both sides. We got to help both sides with their issues. And I think it gave us that insight into, you know, both sides, I think, are trying to do what they think is best for Missouri. They may have different ways to get there, but I truly believe that almost everybody in our political process has the right motives. There may be disagreements on how you make Missouri better, but I think they all want to make Missouri better. And I think working in the Senate, working with both Democrats and Republicans, gives you that firsthand knowledge of that.
We saw that.
Yeah.
We? Like, you see that while the pronouncements and the the news conferences often can be the, okay, we're going to put on this face of,
yeah,
here's our platform, what we're going to emphasize. But when you go behind the scenes, they're talking, they're working together, they're trying to get things, compromises done. And it, you see it firsthand. Yeah. I always, my favorite story, I got a couple back when you and I were there, of, was it back then? It was Majority Leader Ronnie DePasco, Democrat from Kansas City, and future Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, Republican, just having at it, just on the floor, just rage. You know, you're like, oh man, this is an ugly fight. And then when they're done, they walked off right by me at the staff table, and Peter's like, Ronnie, we need to have a drink together. And Ronnie's like, yes, we do. And they went into Ronnie's office right across the hall and figured it out, you know. And that happens more than you than you think. I know it's been a little rocky lately, with a few that bombastic, but in general, it works really well.
No, I think so. I mean, you know, you and I were there when, so on the Appropriations Committee, Senator John Russell, Republican, one of the most conservative people you're ever going to meet.
That's right.
Great guy.
Wonderful man.
You know, from, you know, rural part of Missouri.
Yeah.
And then the ranking Democrat at the time, Senator Wayne Good, you know, also a giant in the Senate from St. Louis, metropolitan, pretty liberal. But, you know, when times got really tough, they worked together. And they worked together to come up with solutions to help Missouri. And you could just tell. And they'd both been in the General Assembly like 40 years. You know, this is before term limits. And it just showed that they could disagree so much on policy and world views, but they respected each other. They liked each other. And when it came down to it, they would work with each other to figure out.
That was really a proud moment, I think, for me professionally. It was part of that staff that worked on really bad budgets. I mean, they were bad budget. But when you when your goal, when you had that support of Wayne and John and Senator Russell and Good, the that support of, like, we're going to make this as least impactful, least harmful policy-wise to our citizens as we can, and they work together. And I remember Senator Good on the floor defending the budget that had cuts in it, and he, you know, said, you put a tax cut, a tax increase bill in front of me, I'm voting for it. I'd vote for it. It won't pass this body, but we did the best we could with the money we had, and that's why I'm voting for these bills. That he did not support the reductions, but voted for the bills.
But he knew that, you know, under the circumstances, that's what we had to do. Because, you know, back then, we were coming out of the early 2000s. We were coming out of the 90s where times had been good for 7 or 8 years. So when we had to cut budgets then, it was sort of new to people. And, you know, and I remember sort of like your story, Senator Good actually went to the press conference with Senator Russell when they were talking about the budget at the end of session and said, John did the best he could with what he had to work with. Would I have liked to have more money to do this? Yes, but that's not the situation we're in. And John did a good job.
Imagine
with
that.
What he could. Yeah, I mean, a Democrat saying that about a Republican.
And they were friends. Those were amazing times. But so let's talk a little bit, though. You and I kind of similar. I remember when, like you said, I love Senate Appropriations and, you know, one of the best places to work in history. I love the camaraderie of it, the size, the and really important role, the important work you did. And really, I loved that place. But I knew I wouldn't leave for very many places in state government. And, you know, I thought, mental health, I think, had such a great reputation of leadership and stability and innovation, and kind of the work it was doing was really important, you know. And we all kind of have a personal story of mental health where, you know, it's becoming less stigmatized now. We often just kept that secret, but we all have kind of something in our family that has touched us from a mental health perspective, or most everybody does. And then I always thought conservation, because, you know, I love hunting fish. So I was like, you know, there's two spots that I might go in state government. And when mental health opened up, you know, I went out there, budget director and director of admin, and then again came out to the private sector side. But then you, Keith, courts you basically very aggressively, gets you to come out to mental health. And so my experiences out there were, I learned so much about mental health, and you're just kind of the admin guy in a way, like doing the accounting and the contracts and reimbursements and all that, the budget and all that. But it does give you insight into the world of mental health, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, and yeah, Keith is pretty persuasive when he wants to, you know, get you to come out and work for you. You're right. Mental health is one of the few places I would have left the Senate for too. But yeah, you know, I mean, just being around all the people that are working there, the clinicians, you know, you just learn from them, you pick up things. And I was lucky enough, and I think it was the same with you. Keith trusted me enough that he didn't just put me in this budget lane, but he would like throw me out there to go, well, we got this issue with some of the providers here. Can you go sort of help work on this? And, you know, he threw me into things that normally I think an admin director wouldn't be in, both on the behavioral health and the DD side. And so that really helped me get to know some of the providers in that. And, you know, that I made it a point, because I didn't have a real background in it that much other than sort of the budget stuff, of like, I'd get to know the provider and I'd be like, hey, can I come out to your place and see what you're doing and see the services you're providing and, you know, figure out how you're doing it, or go to, you know, our state mental health institutions, you know, yeah, go see what they're doing there and, you know, go up to Biggs at the time or whatever, yeah, and talk to him, you know, and go you know, or Dr. Gowdy take me around and, you know, and just talking to him and learning from him. And, you know, and again, it's just looking back on things, you know, just so many great people I worked with, you know, because it was Keith Schaefer was a department director, but when I was over there, you know, Mark Stringer was the division director, and then Dr. Gowdy was over there, and
yeah, Joe Parks at Medicaid.
Joe Parks was there too, and for a while. Yeah. And so just some great people to learn from, you know, and probably if there's one key to success in my career, it's I had good people to learn from. And I was the one thing I probably was smart enough to do was understand that these are people I should try to pick things up from and figure out why are they doing what they're doing, because they're very successful. And so, yeah, on the mental health side, the behavioral health side, got to pick up a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I was only over the department for like 3 years before, like I said before, I was told
before the loan.
Yeah. The loan that's going on 10 years now.
10-year loan.
But yeah, it was a really, you know, interesting time in my life. And, you know, and then I got to do other things over there. Like, you know, I went through the mental health first aid training while I was over there and got to learn that stuff. And that gives you a whole different perspective. And, you know, while I was over there, you know, I've got three daughters, you know, they were college, high school age. And just like a lot of people, there were some mental health struggles there, you know, that, and so it helped me sort of realize that, you know, to help them sort of see that going to talk to somebody is a good thing. It shouldn't be stigma and all that kind of stuff. And I think they've embraced that throughout their life now as young adults. And I don't know if I wouldn't have been over there exposed to mental health that I would have even realized that that was something to encourage them to seek out and take advantage of.
And the youth of the country now, I think, because that stigma is breaking down.
Yes.
I think we're seeing like a real change in attitudes around mental health because of
100%
things that have started to break. And then I think, I don't know if the youth just seem to naturally understand that, you know, this is okay and it's fine. And I think there is a bit of a difference there happening in the
country. Yeah, I don't think the stigma for their generation is it's nearly what it is for ours, which is why, you know, I don't think they would mind me saying some, you know, this stuff here.
No, not a big deal.
You know, yeah, it's like it happens to everybody. You know, we all have times in our life when, you know, we could use some mental health services. And so, yeah, I think the younger generation certainly has done much better than our generation did.
I agree. Well, the funny thing, I think maybe I knew the loan story or maybe I just didn't know the story, but it does explain, like, I always was so impressed because I knew you had a commitment to mental health, obviously, from working there. But when we were starting this CCBHC thing, which is, you know, I always remember the rapid response Medicaid reviews, like, literally told the state you're underinvested in SUD and mental health services and you're in your program.
Yeah.
You know, relative to what other states are spending. Like we had this issue where we're just kind of doing a lot of cool innovation, but just kind of core access.
Yeah.
We had just, this is true. You deal with this in other spaces, but those old Medicaid rates, you know, from way back were just, you know, unsustainable in some ways, or not allowing you to compete with other healthcare providers. Psychiatry were leaving the safety net because they could make more private pay, you know, and just, you couldn't compete.
Yeah.
You know, CCBHC's done a lot, but you attended those meetings as budget director because it was an important, it was a big initiative and a big, you know, it needed MoHealthNet support. It needed the budget office's support. It needed the political support. I mean, it, you know, it was a decision, and you were at those, you were there at the beginning for all those meetings, which is kind of cool in a way and probably wouldn't happen, but you were maybe either on loan, but you just came from mental health and you knew it was
having that background certainly helped me understand what the benefits were going to be, you know, and obviously being budget director, you always have to be like, well, we got to make sure costs, these costs aren't going to get out of control. Can we make this sustainable? And, you know, I think working with people like you, people over the department, we were like, we got comfortable that, you know, because this is a big change.
It's a big change.
You know,
it really was.
It's it's really hard to make big changes like that in state government. It just really is, you know. And so we got comfortable that this was going to be a positive change and wasn't going to blow up the budget. You know, that was sort of, as my hat as budget director, it was like, all right, this is, I see the benefits here, but like, if after 2 or 3 years, this is going to double the cost for the state, well, then that's not sustainable. That's not going to be a good decision for the state. So, you know, got comfortable with that. I think we've got a lot of good people, you know, people that work with you, Brent, on the provider side, and in the department, that were able to, I think, come up with some creative ways to make sure that we maximized the Medicaid reimbursements and that kind of stuff to make it so that budgetarily we could do this, so that then clinically we were able to you know, offer more of these services and supports and provide services in a way that made more sense for the clients. And yeah, that's one of the things I'm really proud of as budget director, that we've been able to move mental health forward. Now, look, none of this happens if I don't work for governors that are very supportive of behavioral health and mental health.
Yeah.
You know, Governor Nixon got it and was very supportive of it. Governor Parson has been, you know, somebody who, you know, I think it's interesting. I don't know if people would initially think that somebody with his law enforcement background would really have that passion for mental health, but I think he saw it from that law enforcement lens of, yeah, I see, you know, when we're not providing support for these people, some of the bad things that can happen both to those people, and unfortunately sometimes there's collateral damage with other people. So I think he really did come at it from that angle, which I think was a great angle to come from. And I learned a lot from him on some of his experiences having to deal with folks and, you know, not having a place to take them and maybe having to put them in jail when that's not really where they should be. And
Dan, I
know we're still working through some of that, but I think it's a lot better than it was.
I think, Dan, I remember when I was at the Department of Mental Health and you have accounting, reimbursements, contracts, budget, you know, and you have that kind of backbone stuff, and trying to make sure they understood that they were as important to those services being provided out in our communities in Missouri as anyone else. You know, there's program managers, there's clinicians, you mentioned some of them, the Mark Stringers and the and Dr. Gowdy's of the world, doing incredible work and making sure, but getting bills paid, getting money collected, getting budgets made. That's some critical work. And so I hope you know, as budget director, like, you're there looking at stuff. But if you think about what you and the governors did for the past 10 years or so, I mean, to your point, the work we've done with law enforcement, those crisis centers that we put out across the state, the CBHLs and the youth liaisons that you all have supported in the budget, the governors put in their state of the state speeches. I mean, those governors and the work you and your team have done, Dan, have changed the landscape and have saved lives in Missouri. And that's really cool. I mean, we appreciate the support of both you and your perspective, but those governors, and we're giving Governor Parson an award. We've given Governor Nixon an award, but they both deserve it because they've been, they really have embraced the services we provide and really have, like you said, put money where their mouth is as far as in the budget and have really changed the landscape here. We're not perfect. Still work to do, but they moved the dial.
Yeah.
And it matters. And so
no,
I'm just very grateful for that.
You know, I'm lucky because it was never a hard sell when I went up there to be like, you know, here's an initiative for behavioral health. You know, here's something that, you know, we can do, but it is going to cost, you know, some money. And they, you know, it wasn't like I had to really convince them to do it. They generally were like, yeah, we see the need for that. We understand what we can do to try to help through the state government. And so that's, you know, been nice to work with governors that really understand the need of people out there.
Yeah. Well, Dan, we're not spring chickens like producer Megan is. We've been around a while, you know, we're not old, but you know, you see the horizon.
We're not young.
You see the horizon there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what are you thinking, man? You got like years left, I know, in your career, but are you going to just play golf and like every day at some point soon? Or
at some point I'd like to play golf every day, but you know, I don't know, you know, when we're recording this, it's, you know, there's a transition going on here.
Right.
And so I want to see Missouri do well. I want to see the next governor to succeed and do well. And so if they feel like there's a role for me to help them out for a while.
For a while?
For a while.
8 years, is that right there?
That might be a little more than a while. But, you know, to help them out, to get them started off on the right foot, if that's something they think I can be helpful with, I'm happy to do it because – you know, I'm not a native Missourian, born and raised in Illinois, just across the river from St. Louis.
But a Cardinal fan.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I grew up about 15 minutes from the stadium, so definitely a Cardinal fan.
That's right.
Not that we want to alienate anybody on the west side of the stadium. You know, the Royals are fine, you know, I'm a Cardinal guy. But anyway, you know, I've lived in Missouri for almost 30 years now and really consider it home. My kids have been raised here. So I want to see Missouri do well. And so if somebody thinks I can help, you know, I'll do it for a while, but yeah, at some point I'm going to retire. I'm not going to stay here forever.
That's right. So just one last bit of advice for our listeners. You know, you've got a fascinating perspective because you have the mental health experience, you have the budget director experience, you worked with various governors. Like, you know, it is important to have a governor that embraces mental health. And we talked about the transition. I think it's safe to say our incoming governor has a feeling like that too. But, you know, we're entering a time, we went through unprecedented COVID and then budget times in our entire, you know, you and I remember when, you know, you'd have to borrow from the rainy day fund to pay bills and make payroll. And now that it's just such a different world.
Yeah.
But it's going to come back to normal. If it's not already a year here normal, just no one knows it yet, but it's going to come back to normal. So when we get into normal where there's just not a lot of money, you got to prioritize, governor, and that's not easy to do.
No.
You mentioned that. So kind of for our listener, you've got to, like, number one, set expectation, but then it's really important. You got to prove your value and kind of how you fit into a larger budget and why your priorities matter and can maybe save money. And how you present that and make it real, not because you and I also hear, what is it? Every person, you spend a dollar with me, Dan, I'll save three, or I'll generate three.
Yeah.
You hear that constantly, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it really will be important that you get into data, you really study things and look at fiscal cost, and it's going to become important again.
Yeah. I mean, look, the last 3 or 4 years of budgets been more like a fantasy land than a normal budget for Missouri. You know, we've been lucky to have some money from the federal government. Our own state revenues have grown at some unprecedented levels for a couple of years, but that's not going to continue forever.
Yeah.
We're going to get back to, you know, budgets that are pretty lean, I think. And I think the key there is you generally go back to sort of the core services you provide.
Right.
And, you know, in all areas of state government, we've done some sort of things that when you've got money are really good things to do, you know, but when things get tight, you might need to pull back in some of those things to make sure that you're funding the core items mm-hmm. within each area. And every area has some of those sort of fun things that we're doing now when we have money that we're probably going to have to pull back a little bit. But what's important, I think, for people to be able to communicate to the budget director, whether it's me or somebody else here sometime in the future, and governors and legislators, is why does our core mission matter? What are we providing the state of Missouri? You know, how are we making Missouri a better place? How are we helping the citizens directly? And those are the things that when things get tight that you're going to go back to. And those are the kind of things that are going to get funded.
Yeah.
And so I think that if you can show that you're making a difference, I think that's important. We really do try to, as much as we can, use data to make our decisions and have, you know, performance measures that show that if we're spending money here, is it really making a difference?
And, right.
You know, some of the things that I know you guys are working on in Medicaid, and some of the things like health homes and some things like that, that really you can show, one, it provides clinical improvement, you know, right.
that people
are actually getting yeah. healthier and their mental health is getting better. But we can also then show that because of that, they're not going to the emergency room 25 times a year where it's way more expensive to treat them.
Yeah.
We're helping them keep, you know, their mental health issues, their behavioral health issues under control, their physical issues under control in the most cost-effective way, which, you know, from a budget perspective, we've got to be able to do that because, you know, you've got a lot of deserving areas that are wanting funding. You know, you've got your K through 12 education, you know, your early childhood education, you got your higher education, you got, you know, all kinds of things. You know, you've got your behavioral health stuff, you've got your developmental disability stuff, you know, you've got Medicaid where we're trying to take care of the physical health of people. And then there's other things that, like, we just have to fund. I mean, we've got to have prisons, you know,
correction system.
You know. And so those are all competing for the dollars. Mm-hmm. And I think probably within the next couple of years, we're going to get back to sort of where there really is competition for the dollars. There's not enough to go around mm-hmm. for everything everybody wants to do. And so the more you can show us that there's measurable impact from what you're doing is important.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, for any, you know, I know this is, you know, focused on the behavioral health stuff, but, you know, for any behavioral health providers out there, the more you can just give us data and show us that you guys are making a difference, I think that helps us, yeah. you know, because I can't just go to a governor and say, I want to give money to this area because, you know, I just think it's going to really help, but I think it's going to be great. And I just got this feeling that you know, they're like, what are you talking about here? What? Give me some data. How is this actually going to help? What have they done in the past that shows they are helpful? And we have to be good stewards of the taxpayers' money and make sure that we spend it in ways that get the most bang for their buck, because, you know, there is a finite amount of money, you know? So
that's right. No, that's a great takeaway and good thing to leave it on. As you know, we've invested a lot of time, effort, and energy here at the council looking at data, collecting data. The providers have been really committed to that. And behavioral health, frankly, has been behind. It's not done a good job of data collection in the past. We collect the bare minimum, but we don't use it very well. But we're getting much better at it. And like you said, Dan, a great example of that, you know, for Governor Parson, you know, those crisis centers take an average of 7 minutes for a law enforcement officer to drop someone off and then to quickly describe the issue and then get back out on the street doing what they should be doing versus going to the emergency room where they often had to sit with that patient in the waiting room for hours waiting to get them in to see someone and make sure they're safe. So the difference is there. If you can track it and prove it, it tells the story better than just, I think those crisis centers are good.
You've got to do
something there to kind of show the value for people. And that'll be more and more important.
Yes.
I think I'm convinced, and not too distant future, that's going to be back to reality.
Yes. For sure. I think we're starting to get there with this next budget. And then as a lot of these federal funds get expended and, you know, our revenues sort of settle back in, because, you know, after COVID, you had sort of a sharp drop, but then you had just this huge rebound of, you know, people were, especially for our tax revenues, people were spending more money on like taxable goods and stuff versus they weren't traveling. They weren't spending money on vacations and that, which we don't really get a lot of tax revenue off of. And now I think it's sort of gone back to that. So that spike in our revenues has sort of gone away. And so we, you know, we're not going to see, we're not going to see these 15, 20% increases in general revenue that we saw for a couple of years. We're going to be back to the more normal 2-3%. And, you know,
still,
which is fine. And, you know, we're also, one of the other things that I think is a legitimate thing to look at and prioritize is some tax cuts for Missourians. So they've got some more money in their pockets too, but that then limits a little bit of we can spend. Yeah. So it's a balancing act of trying to figure out the right amount to try to collect for Missourians so that we can provide them the services that they want and need. But, you know, you don't want to overdo it on either side.
That's
so
right.
It's a balancing act.
That's right. Well, Dan, we've taken too much of your time. It was great catching up. We don't get to see each other as much as we used to, but maybe when that horizon gets closer where we can like work part-time
at
Salt or something, maybe we'll get Salt or something.
There you go. And that sounds good.
We'll just kind of talk to people about our being old and our experiences, and then we can just golf more. That sounds like good. A plan. We need to pick up and talk about that. Well, State Budget Director Dan Hogg, thanks for being with us on Show Me State of Mind.